and his Sankirtan activity. The chronology of this is just after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's visit to Vrindavan. Adi Lila just presents a summary of that. And before going to Vrindavan, he encountered the Mayavadi camp in Benares, and he was meditating upon his return, or in the course of making his return, how to deliver the Mayavadis there. So in the beginning of this chapter, there's a description of the various features, the Panchatattva. And I'll begin from there. Five tattvas incarnate with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and thus the Lord executes his Sankirtan movement with great pleasure. Krishna Varnam Tusaha Krishna Sangopangaska Parshadam Yagyai Sankirtana Prayaya Yajanti Hisumedasa. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was always accompanied by his plenary expansions of Sri Nityananda Prabhu, his incarnation, Sri Advaita Prabhu, his internal potency, Gadadhar Prabhu, and his marginal potency, Srivas Prabhu. He is in the midst of all of them as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Next text. Spiritually, there are no differences between these five tattvas. For on the transcendental platform, everything is absolute. Yet there are also varieties in the spiritual world. And in order to taste these spiritual varieties, one should distinguish between them. Let me first offer my obeisances unto Lord Sri Krishna, who has manifested himself in five. As a devotee, the expansion of a devotee, the incarnation of a devotee, pure devotee, and devotional energy. Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure. The Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, the Supreme Controller. No one is greater than or equal to Krishna, and yet he appears as the son of Nanda Maharaj. Really? Who knows where the reference is? Shukla Rakhastata Pita. Madhuri, you know? Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality Godhead, is the Supreme Enjoyer in the Rasa Dance. He is the leader of the damsels of Braja, and all others are simply his associates. The self-same Lord Krishna advented himself as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with all his eternal associates, who are all equally glorious. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the Supreme Controller, the one Personality of Godhead, has ecstatically become a devotee. Yet his body is transcendental and not materially tinged. The transcendental mellow of conjugal love of Krishna is so wonderful that Krishna himself accepts the form of a devotee to relish and taste it fully. For this reason, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Teacher, accepts the form of a devotee and accepts Lord Nityananda as his elder brother. Sri Dvaitacharya is Lord Chaitanya's incarnation as a devotee. Therefore, these three tattvas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and Advaita Gosai, are the predominators or masters. One of them is Mahaprabhu, and the other two are also Prabhus. These two Prabhus serve the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu. The three predominators are worshipable by all living entities, and the fourth principle, Sri Kedadhar Prabhu, is to be understood as their worshipper. There are innumerable pure devotees of the Lord, headed by Srivas Thakur, who are known as unalloyed devotees. The devotees headed by Gadadhar Pandit are to be considered incarnations of the potency of the Lord. They are internal potential devotees engaged in the service of the Lord. It's like, sounds like feedback in the microphone or something over there. Not, I guess I get used to it. The internal devotees, or potencies, are all eternal associates in the pastimes of the Lord. Only with them does the Lord advent to propound the Sankirtan movement. Only with them does the Lord taste the mellow of conjugal love. And only with them does he distribute this love of God to people in general. So that's the philosophical foundation for this particular section. The relationship of Lord Chaitanya and his associates in performing the Sankirtan pastimes. Then it describes the activity of his Sankirtan pastimes specifically. The characteristics of Krishna are understood to be a storehouse of transcendental love. Although that storehouse of love certainly came with Krishna when he was present, it was sealed. But when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came with his other associates of the Panchatattva, they broke the seal and plundered the storehouse to taste transcendental love of Krishna. The more they tasted it, the more their thirst for it grew. I'll read a short purport. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was called Mahabhadanyavatara because although he is Sri Krishna himself, he is even more favorably disposed to the poor fallen souls than Lord Sri Krishna. When Lord Sri Krishna himself was personally present, he demanded that everyone surrender unto him and promised that he would give one all protection. But when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to this earth with his associates, he simply distributed transcendental love of God without discrimination. Sri Rupa Goswami, therefore, could understand that Lord Chaitanya was none other than Sri Krishna himself. For no one but the Supreme Personality of Godhead can distribute confidential love of the Supreme Person. Next text. Sri Panchatattva themselves danced again and again and thus made it easier to drink nectarian love of Godhead. They danced, cried, laughed and chanted like madmen. In this way, they distributed love of Godhead. Purport. People generally cannot understand the actual meaning of chanting and dancing. Describing the Goswamis, Sri Srinivasacharya stated, Krishnot Kirtana Gana Natana Paro. Not only did Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates demonstrate this chanting and dancing, but the six Goswamis also followed in the next generation. The present Krishna consciousness movement follows the same principle, and therefore, simply by chanting and dancing, we have received good responses all over the world. It is to be understood, however, that this chanting and dancing do not belong to this material world. They are actually transcendental activities, for the more one engages in chanting and dancing, the more he can taste the nectar of transcendental love of Godhead. Next text. In distributing love of Godhead, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates did not consider who was a fit candidate and who was not, nor where such distribution should or should not take place. They made no conditions. Wherever they got the opportunity, the members of the Panchatattva distributed love of Godhead. Although the members of the Panchatattva plundered the storehouse of love of Godhead and ate and distributed its contents, there was no scarcity, for this wonderful storehouse is so complete that as the love is distributed, the supply increases hundreds of times. The flood of love of Godhead swelled in all directions, and thus young men, old men, women, and children were all immersed in that inundation. The Krishna consciousness movement, this is a translation, Krishna consciousness movement will inundate the entire world and drown everyone, whether one be a gentleman, a rogue, or even lame, invalid, or blind. When the five members of the Panchatattva saw the entire world drowned in love of Godhead, and the seed of material enjoyment in the living entities completely destroyed, they became exceedingly happy. I'll read the purport. In this connection, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur writes in his Anupasya that since the living entities all belong to the marginal potency of the Lord, each and every living entity has a natural tendency to become Krishna conscious, although at the same time the seed of material enjoyment is undoubtedly within him. The seed of material enjoyment, watered by the course of material nature, fructifies to become a tree of material entanglement which endows the living entity with all kinds of material enjoyment. To enjoy such material facilities is to be afflicted with the three material miseries. However, when by nature's law there is a flood, the seeds within the earth become inactive. Similarly, as the inundation of love of Godhead spreads all over the world, the seeds of material enjoyment become impotent. Thus, the more the Krishna consciousness movement spreads, the more the desire for material enjoyment decreases. The seed of material enjoyment automatically becomes impotent with the increase of the Krishna consciousness movement. Instead of being envious that Krishna consciousness is spreading all over the world by the grace of Lord Chaitanya, those who are jealous should be happy, as indicated here by the words Parama Ulasa. But because they are Kanishta Adhikaris or Prakriti Bhaktas, they are envious instead of happy, and they try to find faults in Krishna consciousness. Yet, Srimad Prabodhananda Saraswati writes in his Chaitanya Chandamrita that when influenced by Lord Chaitanya's Krishna consciousness movement, materialists become averse to talking about their wives and children. Supposedly learned scholars give up their tedious studies of the Vedic literature. Yogis give up their impractical practices of mystic yoga. Ascetics give up their austere activities of penance and austerity. And sannyasis give up their study of Sankhya philosophy. Thus, they are all attracted by the bhakti yoga practices of Lord Chaitanya and cannot relish a mellow taste superior to that of Krishna consciousness. We'll go back and discuss some of these points. Just read a little further. The more the five members of the Panchatattva cause the rains of love of Godhead to fall, the more the inundation increases and spreads all over the world. The impersonalists, fruitive workers, false logicians, blasphemers, non-devotees, and lowest among the student community are very expert in avoiding the Krishna consciousness movement, and therefore the inundation of Krishna consciousness cannot touch them. Seeing that the Mayavadis and others were fleeing, Lord Chaitanya thought, I wanted everyone to be immersed in this inundation of love of Godhead, but some of them have escaped. Therefore, I shall devise a trick to drown them also. Thus, the Lord accepted the sannyas order of life after full consideration. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu remained in householder life for 24 years, and on the verge of his 25th year, he accepted the sannyas order. After accepting the sannyas order, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu attracted the attention of all those who had evaded him, beginning with the logicians. Thus, the student infidels, fruitive workers, and critics all came to surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord. The Lord excused them all, and they merged into the ocean of devotional service, for no one can escape the unique loving network of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to deliver all the fallen souls. Therefore, he devised many methods to liberate them from the clutches of Maya. And then the description goes on of Lord Chaitanya encountering the Mayavadi sannyasis. So just to review some of the points that are being made here, Prabhupada, there's some emphasis that the qualities of Krishna themselves are the storehouse of love of God. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared with his associates, the assistants, the verse is quoted, describing the functions that these assistants have. They're his astras, just like whenever the personality of Godhead comes, he comes to curb the influence of irreligious practices. And when necessary, he annihilates those who are disturbing the religious order. So, in the case of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his astras were his associates, not the club and the chakra, but Gadadhar Prabhu, Advaita Prabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and Srivas Thakur. And with these associates, their function to assist him was to spread the glories of Krishna, to enumerate, describe, and chant and glorify the wonderful qualities of Krishna. This was specifically the storehouse of love of God that they broke open. And as they were engaged in the activity of chanting the glories of Krishna, or distributing the contents of the storehouse of love of God, they became maddened in spiritual ecstasy. And that maddened state of spiritual ecstasy was flooding everywhere. They were distributing madly the contents. They were performing the glorification of the Lord, the congregational chanting of the holy name everywhere. So then also the description is presented how, practically speaking, that affected others. It affected others by the example given is the sprouting of seeds. When you see this in Bengal, all over the place where they do their agriculture, rather than spending great hours picking all the weeds and gardens, they very practically just flood the field with water so that the weeds can't grow. And the desirable things are growing and the undesirable things are flooded. Seeds are still there in the ground, but they don't sprout. So, I'll just read that little section again. Lord Chaitanya's plan. By distributing Krishna consciousness very liberally, it curbs the influence of materialism. So the preaching field that we have is particularly pronounced in materialism. The advantage, one of the advantages of traveling to visit third world countries is to see what a contrasting position the opulence that in the West or in America we're accustomed to is so far a superior grade or variety of sense gratification, of opportunities to drown the senses in sense objects and in material enjoyment. Prabhupada writes in his purport, the seed of material enjoyment watered by the course of material nature, fructifies to become a tree of material entanglement, which endows the living entity with all kinds of material enjoyment. That tree that grows supplies so many things for further material enjoyment. In this way, the living entity becomes completely entangled, seeing nothing but material enjoyment everywhere. And so many people that come to populate this country have immigrated from some other place and they're still busy doing the same thing, with the expectation, the promise of becoming gross materialists, very, very absorbed in materialism. In the course of, I'll just tell a couple of accounts from the effects of preaching. In this course of this recent traveling I've done, I've met some people who came from India or from different places, first of all to New York, as many immigrants do. And they had some relatives here, or they just found some place where they could stay, and for some time hold up in some decrepit little apartment, engaged in some nasty, undesirable business until they could get it together to get out of New York. And in the course of their being in New York, I'll tell you one man's account specifically, that he used to see the devotees everywhere Even recently, Ram Bhadra has been describing this phenomenon that he used to see everywhere he went, he would find devotees. Whether it was coming in from New Jersey, going to Port Authority, or on the avenues and streets, seeing Harinam parties, or finding a book distributor here or there, finding a book in a bookstore, and everywhere he went, he saw devotees. So this one man was telling us the same thing. He used to... his father had one of those nasty magazine stands in Times Square. Mr. Patel had his nasty magazine stand. And he and his son ran the business just as a practical thing to get themselves by in the early days of immigrating into America. And whether they were in the subway, because at that time we were doing a lot of book distribution and Sankirtan activity in the subway. Those were the days when we had bags full of Luglus and Reservoirs of Pleasure. Archita remembers. And one of the main crossroads, you know, from crossing over from this train to that train, was to go past the shuttle, and we regularly passed by Mr. Patel's nasty magazine stand. So he regularly was taking Luglus and invitations to the temple, and eventually the devotees came to leave their stash of books there, because he was such a nice man. They wouldn't have to lug them around in the subway. Lug the Luglus and lug the books. So when he came to this country, before he came to this country, he didn't know about Krishna consciousness movement. In fact, later on we went to his home just to, because he invited us for lunch. He began telling us the story that from when he was 5 years old, he was trained in devotion. In fact, he was taught the term bhakti. His family was very religious. They had a family deity, and his father was so religious, and the son was so inclined as the father was, that his father gave him his own deity, just like we find Prabhupada's description of how his father gave him also deity to worship. But he had no idea what devotion was. So when he came to this country, but he was every day throughout his whole life engaged in some activities that he called bhakti. Of course, his business certainly wasn't very devotional, and he didn't like it at all. And because he was like in the middle of a desert, the association of devotees was an oasis for him. So he used to go whenever he could to visit the temple on 55th Street. And then his son, both of these men are now initiated devotees. His son, well, both of them, whenever they would take turns being cooped up in a little nasty magazine stand box. So whenever they were going out here or there, and they would regularly also see devotees chanting. But the son made it his practice, whenever he saw devotees coming, he would cross the street to go to the other side. Because he was thinking, oh, I know everything about Krishna. I don't want to have to hear from the Hare Krishnas about Krishna. But nonetheless, he was very attracted by the kirtan party. And he's very relaxed about telling all of this kind of foolishness that he went through. Although he was avoiding the devotees, he would always think about the devotees. And whenever he had some opportunity, they would go to the temple. But even when going to the temple, he would avoid talking to devotees. He just would go take darshan of the deities. He just didn't want to have to hear Krishna's glories. But he was attracted to Krishna's glories. So anyway, in the course of time, they left and they went to Texas, the whole family, father and son, and rest of the children. And gradually, they began associating with the temple there also. And gradually, they began reading Prabhupada's books. Rest of the family. There's still some family members that are escaping. But they're also attracted and gradually following suit. And now the father, who is some elderly grandfather, 60-some years, 70 years, something, he's making it his business to read through entirely the entire Srimad Bhagavatam and the entire Chaitanya Charitamrita. He's finished Srimad Bhagavatam. He was saying, at 65 years old. At 65 years old, now for the first time I understand what I was taught when I was 5 years old. I was doing so many things and calling it bhakti. I had no idea. And for reading Prabhupada's books, now I'm fully convinced and fully satisfied. I used to read so many religious books and attend so many religious functions, and now I have none of those desires left. I just want to absorb myself in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, I took a lot of inspiration from that description, because both of these men, father and son, there's anyway some other children in the family that I didn't get to know so well, but they're both just wonderful people, very, very wonderful devotees. And their first contact, like so many, many people, are in big, nasty cities like New York. And particularly New York, because this is the mecca of sense gratification. So many people migrate from all over the planet to get contaminated by the nasty sense gratification of New York, like flies attracted to a filthy place. Another man was commenting in the same way, that everything that you devotees of Krishna have to say, I know is right. And I can even tell the difference between the things that the devotees of Krishna say and the things that so many other people say about Hindu religion. I know that what you're saying is right. But we've come to the Western world, we've come to America, because why? Like this verse is describing. We're attracted to sense gratification. We're Vishayis. We want to be enjoyers. That's our problem. But here we are. We're hearing about Krishna. So we need your association more and more. In effect, he was giving the same purport that Prabhupada explains here. We just need so much association that all of our material desires would just become drowned. Already they're very, but they've already grown to some extent. They're already very strong. Even when I associate with others, this man was complaining, whenever I go to a temple, everywhere I go I hear people talking about their material business affairs, what investments they've made and what social functions are going on. I said that's just the nature of the advanced stage of material desire. Even we know better. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's remedy or his medicine is the Sankirtan movement. Because the Sankirtan activity, just as Ramana Bhatta was reading this morning, is both good for the performer and good for the recipient. Because the constant performance of Sankirtan, or the constant immersion in chanting the glories of Krishna, trying to understand just as this section is describing, by understanding there are no differences between these five tattvas. For on the transcendental platform, everything is absolute. Yet there are also varieties in the spiritual world, and in order to taste these spiritual varieties, one should distinguish between them. So, discussing, just like this example specifically, discussing the differences between the features of the Panchatattva, although they are spiritually on the same platform, distinguishing their particulars adds to the tasting of transcendental bliss. So all of the topics in relation to Krishna, by exploring them, trying to understand them and describing them and discussing them amongst devotees and broadcasting that understanding, making that same, involving others in that same katha, is good for us and good for others. As with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Sankirtan pastime began at Shiva Sangha, where just the intimate associates of Lord Chaitanya became involved in the nocturnal kirtan. And they would even lock the doors so others couldn't come in. So at least so it couldn't be disrupted by rascal nonsense people. And as that kirtan went on nightly, gradually it began increasing. And as it began increasing, sometimes it would continue on through the night and into the morning. And then gradually the kirtan would become so overwhelmingly ecstatic, they would open the gate and go out into the courtyard, then go out into the street, and then go down into the marketplace. And in this way, gradually, he went through the whole area of Nadia, the kirtan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And from there, all over India. And from there, all over the world. So, to make the Sankirtan activities most effective, Arjuna, are you leaving altogether? Leaving? Okay. To make those Sankirtan activities most effective, the hearing and chanting activities amongst the devotees should be, must be, the starting point. And in the course of those hearing and chanting activities amongst the devotees, naturally it will follow the concern to give this opportunity for hearing and chanting to others. And the Sankirtan movement, as Prabhupada brought it to the West, began in the same way. Also, Prabhupada performing kirtan with whoever was there to come and participate. In the beginning, the description is there in all of the biographical information, that the programs at the little storefront that Prabhupada started from. The kirtan before class went on for an hour with Prabhupada leading and the devotees responding. And we find in those descriptions that after the kirtan, many people got up and left. Because, in other words, they were there for the kirtan. When it came to the Prabhupada speaking, they didn't want to hear Prabhupada tell them that they had to stop their nonsense or whatever else he had to tell them, or to hear directly the glories of Krishna. They thought that there was some, they felt there was some magic in the chanting. And they wanted to pick up on the vibes of the chanting. But from that taking part in the chanting, even those that didn't stay to hear became permanently, their lives became permanently different. Just as this devotee in Texas describes how his life also became permanently different. Although he was avoiding, he was affected. Infected or affected, both. So we can't, same way, we can't measure what the effect of our sankirtan activities are by our own limited kinds of measures. But here and there we can see what the effect is upon the lives of other people. And as from the earlier stages of Prabhupada's beginning his sankirtan activities, gradually it became the next thing to do, to take those same activities into the park, and from the park onto the streets, and from the streets into other parts of the city, and from the other parts of the city into other cities. Just was listening to a lecture Prabhupada gave at some public function in Balboa Park. Architon lent me the tape. Prabhupada's starting in the same way, he's starting to talk about Lord Chaitanya, describing how he was the son of Sachi, and he was born in the district of Nadia in West Bengal, and some crazy guy stands up. I can't yet figure out what he's saying, but something to do about right in the middle of the lecture, probably just getting underway, describing Lord Chaitanya, this guy comes out. I want to have sex more frequently than you allow. There's a big silence. And Prabhupada completely changed his lecture. This man is crazy. And then he began addressing the question about sex in vivid detail about what the practices in Krishna consciousness are. And then he made an appeal. So this as this movement began in New York, I had nothing, but people came and assisted me, and now I don't know what year the tape was, 72. We have 60 branches all over in America and branches all over the world. So I'm requesting you, particularly in America, to take up this Krishna consciousness and help us spread love of God. So, as innocently as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, upon his first meeting with Prabhupada, asked him to take up this task of taking the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and bringing it to the English-speaking parts of the world. Then in turn, Prabhupada recorded all of his transcendental ecstasies in the form of his books, and he's requested us to take these books and take the holy name and take the congregational chanting of the holy name into the public, and without expectation, just as without some expectation of reward for ourselves, just simply for the for furthering the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, these activities should go on, distributing transcendental knowledge, distributing the mercy of the holy name, telling people about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, in America, there are people from all over the world, and that they're all different nationalities, and even more specifically, here in New York, it's such a combination of everybody from every imaginable culture on the planet. So, who has heard of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? But in explaining to people who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it becomes very relishable, and it's like the sweetness of explaining Krishna consciousness to people who aren't from India, that are Western in their upbringing. So they're not assuming so many things. You don't have to undo so many misunderstandings before establishing understandings. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also unknown by many people. Although they may have heard of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, persons born in India, they don't understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as we understand him. So, just as the qualities of Krishna are the storehouse of love of God, so also the qualities of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are as well. And this is our sankirtan activity, ultimately describing the personality of Godhead, so that people can also relish with us. I thought it might be a nice way to, before the awards come up, before the next part of the program, is to ask some of the sankirtan devotees to describe, or as far as possible, each of the devotees who were taking part in the marathon to describe some experience they had, a sankirtan story, some experience they had in the course of the marathon that helped them appreciate the value of giving these books to other people, or the miracles that happen when you're doing sankirtan, amazing realizations of something perhaps that just completely turned the tide of becoming fixed when everything seemed to be vacant. Some nice sankirtan experience. So, does anybody want to volunteer a nice sankirtan story? Radini Shakti had his hand up first. Do we have people in the kitchen? I'm going to take the microphone off the stand and pass it around.
About the unconditional nature of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, how it goes out to everyone and anyone regardless of their condition of life. And we've also heard the expression Sankirtan fever. So I was in the Penn Station distributing books and had an instance of this Sankirtan fever sweeping up the conditioned soul. So as I was distributing books, a policeman came up to me and he said, did you give some of your books to a man who I saw distributing the books? I said, no, I didn't do that. said, I think you better come with me. So as we were walking along, and the policeman was hurrying, he was saying, I saw this homeless man, and he was walking through the terminal with these Bhagavad Gitas in his hand, and he was trying to sell them. So he said, no, I definitely didn't give the Bhagavad Gita to this homeless man. So he went to the area where he had seen him, and the man wasn't there. So he got on the walkie-talkie, and he started alerting all the other police in the area, where was this man? And a fellow policeman came up, and he said, oh, yes, I saw him. I threw him out. He didn't belong here. So we took off as fast as we could, up the way the policeman had indicated. And we got outside of Penn Station, and there, halfway up the block, was this homeless man. He was dressed in rags, and he was holding two Bhagavad Gitas in each hand, walking up the street, trying to sell them to people. So he had been watching the Sankirtan, and he just got swept up in the fever of book distribution. And he just couldn't resist the opportunity to distribute the nectar. So we know that Srila Prabhupada says that if a person looks at a book or even touches a book, they receive mercy that we can't understand. And although it is inconceivable, we have no reason to doubt Srila Prabhupada's words. So Narottam Das Thakur has said, Patita Pavana Hetu Tava Avatar, that to save the most fallen, Lord Chaitanya has appeared. So certainly this man made tremendous benefit.
As you were talking about how we can't really understand the effects book distribution when it has on people, and a lot of times devotees will see the books going out and they won't know how they're being used. Maybe they're thinking a lot of the people will throw them away or whatever. But this is a story that's a little outside of what actually happened down in Sankirtan. I got some other stories about that, but we were talking, this was like a couple of days ago, after Prasadam, about how different devotees joined the movement. And Nada Sudarman was telling about how he was, before he joined the movement, he was living in a cave in Crete, which is an island off of Greece. A lot of, quote, hippies were living there, because it's kind of an island of paradise or something like that. And he was going to switch caves, and he was looking for a new cave, and as he was climbing amongst the rocks, we've all seen these pictures of Hercules and the Odyssey and whatever, and Saturday morning movies, rocky islands in Greece. So he's climbing to find his new cave, and looks down in a crevice, and lo and behold, there's a Bhagavad Gita there. And so he started reading the Bhagavad Gita, and that's how he became a devotee. Another story that he told about the devotee, he became a devotee in France. He was really addicted to fishing. And would have been the same that he was fishing in Paris? Some river that he was fishing, and then I don't know if devotees know how the great classics of India, they all came shrink wrapped with this plastic covering it. So he's fishing one day, and he snagged the hook on something, and he pulled it out, and it was a shrink wrapped great classics of India, Bhagavad Gita. perfectly preserved in the shrink wrap. And then he became a devotee as a result of that. So even such a tamasic activity as fishing can turn you into a devotee if we're distributing a lot of books. So probably someone got the book and then chucked it out. I have a similar story to Ladini Shanti. There's a pastime oftentimes in airports with maintenance personnel, where they get a book that's been thrown out in the trash, they pick it up here or there, and then they'll come back and they'll try and sell it to you.
So there was this maintenance man. Reminded me a little bit of Harry Ashford, actually. He kind of had a similar mode to him. Kind of real happy-go-lucky and just kind of was jiving all the time. So he comes up and he tries to sell Douglas Bruce the book. And Douglas, you know, I was asking for five. So then he starts on me. You know, he's trying to give it to me for three. And he said, well, what about a dollar? And I said, 50 cents, and that's it. And so, okay, well, I'll sell it myself. So for the next hour and a half, he's out there right with us trying to distribute. I don't actually sell. I think he gave up after about a half an hour. But then he would do it every day, and Dougie would keep trying to coach him and train him up. And this went on, and we got to actually be pretty good friends again. I have several, but I don't want to dominate things too much. But there was actually in an after post-marathon marathon. We kept going after Christmas. And both Dougie and I weren't approaching women. We just figured, well, it's just better for our potency if we stay away from the girls. And I just happened to notice there was a, we were kind of in a crossroads in the airport, and we were surrounded by shops, snack bars, and different stores. And there was one young lady that just was mesmerized by what we were doing. You could just tell by her eyes that she was like, wow, you know, that's great, you know. I mean, her eyes are just lighting up with each transaction. This was going on for like about an hour. So it was like towards the end of the evening, and I couldn't resist. I just went over and said, you know, said, well, you want one too? And she didn't really have an idea who we were. She said, well, who are you guys anyway? You know, but she was like super impressed with the activity. And I can imagine, you guys are so brave, you're so bold, you just go up there, you guys are who the person is. And of course, we were dealing a lot with soldiers there, you know, so just go up and blow the guys away, you know, they'd just be cracking up. Businessman or whatever, and but she's so appreciative, you know. And I just laid the mercy, and I just piled all these books on her, and she wasn't in any way negative or afraid of Krishna consciousness, even though she didn't know who we were, what we were doing. So she was so appreciative of the activity. But then when I told her, you know, that we were devotees, and then she just got all these inquiries. So even though we weren't even planning to deal with the personality, you know, she kind of, out of an attraction to the sanctifying activity, you know, she got so purified and inquisitive. And, you know, she just lives a few minutes away from the Hillsville Project, the farm project in North Carolina, and she may very well become a devotee, who knows. And there's one other point. When we started working in the airport there, we just ran into a whole barrage of impediments from the security. They would come around and just hassling us to the max. They would you know, stand like 3 feet away from us, and just as we're ready to ask for the donation, they would pipe up and say, "Well, you really don't have to give the donation. You can give them a dollar, or just don't give them anything." This kind of thing was going on pretty much continuously, and we were getting a lot of flack from U.S. Air officials. Employees also, they come through and try and break things up. And the dentist, just in a short period, like about 10, 15 years, we were pumping a lot of books out, and they were seeing it, some of them were getting more and more like envious. But then it just seemed to change, you know, like about 2 days before Christmas, you know, people started saying hi to us. There was a guy that was like in charge of the food maintenance facilities there. And he was like real super sour, you know, when we were starting. But then he started saying hello and said, "Well, you guys put in longer hours than we do," and the whole mood started changing. And some of the security people that were just like super antagonistic, you know, I said, "How are you doing today, officer?" And the guy responded, "Yeah, pretty good." And he said, "How are you?" "Well, I'm trying. What else can I do?" You know, and. And it actually started happening. And this is the guy that was the worst. And you know, he got changed by the activity. So it's pretty remarkable. Not just the person that gets the book, but the people that see the activity going on. The whole atmosphere is incredibly purifying by book distribution.
Hey, Ron.
Two incidents, just one pre-marathon and one last Saturday. Pre-marathon, I gained a realization of how unlimited the mercy of the book distributors are. They're not really concerned so much as to social status when they're distributing books. Ladini Shakti and I were in Penn Station. This was about a month ago. And Penn Station gets real passionate around rush hour. Just people blowing by you, and it's very hard to stop anybody and get them to take a book. So I went upstairs, which is Madison Square Garden. And if anybody's been to Madison Square Garden, they know that a lot of men hang out trying to scalp tickets. They buy them at a set price, and then they try to resell them for a higher price. So I immediately knew that this man was a scalper, but I figured maybe it'll be interesting. So I approached him. I said, you know, what's coming up at the garden? And we started talking.